such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good Thursday afternoon. This is Mary Helen Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, as well as the DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture at the University of Notre Dame. And I am joined today by my co-host, Loretta Frelich. And we are sitting in today for Father Anthony. As you know, we're not normally here on a Thursday, but Father is a little under the weather today, so we are going to be sitting in for him today. And how good God is and how providential it is that we are here today, especially with our first guest. For those of you who have not had the news on this morning, the Supreme Court has ruled unanimously in favor of the Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of Philadelphia's social services in order to permit them to conduct their foster care programs and their adoption services in accordance with their Catholic faith. And I can't think of anyone better to join us to discuss, you know, this amazing unanimous decision than our first guest, Mary Rice Hassan. Mary is a colleague of mine at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, where she directs the Catholic Women's Forum, and she is the Kate O'Byrne Fellow in Catholic Studies. Mary has dual degrees from the University of Notre Dame as an undergraduate and then a law student, a double domer is what we call those in the Midwest. She's also a wife and a mother, the recipient of numerous Catholic awards, rather, a published author and speaker, and particularly an expert on not only matters of gender ideology and the related issues that flow from that, but also on homeschooling. And along with her sister, Dr. Teresa Farnan, she is the co-author of Get Out Now, Why You Should Pull Your Child from Public Schools Before It Is Too Late, and also the editor of Promise and Challenge, Catholic Women Reflect on Feminism, Complementarity and the Church, published by our Sunday Visitor. Mary, welcome, and thank you for being our guest today on Winds of Change.
Thank you so much, Mary. It's a delight to be on with you.
Well, were you surprised by the 9-0 this morning?
I was definitely surprised in the Fulton case to see a 9-0 decision, to see it break down that way, especially in light of the oral argument. But hey, we'll take the win.
Wow. Well, you know what? We were talking last week with Andrea Picciotti Bear about this case. As you know, she's been following that quite closely, right, as more from the religious liberty angle. And she was telling us that Stephen Breyer had looked quite distressed during oral arguments. So she said, you know, you never know, because sometimes opinions can change. But she said at one point he put his head down, his hands, and looked quite distressed by the answer to a question for the city attorney for Philadelphia. So she said this could go 7-2, possibly even 8-1. But so I was simply astounded when I saw that it had gone 9-0. Have you had a chance to read the opinion yet? I've just had an opportunity to skim it, Mary, but I've not read the whole thing yet since this just came out about an hour and a half ago.
Yeah, I'm midway through it. There's a lot to read here, but one of the interesting things to me, and perhaps this explains the 9-0 breakdown here, is that the court really looks very closely at the contract and decides that the contract, what the city was requiring of Catholic social services, would make the law against the anti-discrimination laws on the basis of sexual orientation no longer neutral and generally applicable, which means that it would then be subject to a higher standard of scrutiny. So they were very specific, honing in on the particular contract and how that relates to the government's obligation to deal fairly with religious parties and to have a deference, and or at least to make sure that if there is a claim of religious burden, that the reasons for overriding that really have to rise to a very high level.
Right, so it's got to pass strict scrutiny. Mary, the one question that a lot of the legal scholars were looking at was, mm-hmm. will this overturn Smith? Will this overturn?
Yeah, no.
And it doesn't look like it did from what I can tell.
No, they specifically did not want to go there. In fact, what the majority opinion says is this falls outside of Smith because this is not a law that is neutral and generally applicable because of the presence of exceptions that were written into that. So you can see there is a division among the court because some of the concurrences were very specific that the court should be going further and overturning Smith. Whereas the majority was unwilling to go that far. But I don't think that means that Smith is going to forever be the law of the land. Smith is that case which basically made it very difficult for someone to demonstrate that there is an infringement of their First Amendment freedom of religion and free exercise.
Right.
So there are other cases that are in the pipeline. So I still hold out hope that Smith will be struck down. But in the meantime, this is a good result. It respects the good work and the important work done by Catholic Social Services and says to religious believers and religious institutions that they cannot be excluded from serving in the public square unless there's some compelling interest that, you know, was not present here. That religious believers are welcome.
Right. And welcome to practice their social services and their charitable works in the same way that they always had for, 125, 150 years in some cases. Here in Illinois, where this show is primarily broadcast, Mary, our Catholic Charities adoption agencies can no longer do adoptions. So we're out now. Mm-hmm. And I think the impact of that on children and on mm-hmm. families who want to adopt, you know, it is quite detrimental. And, you know, one of the points that I have always tried to make is that at least with birth mothers I worked with when I was working in the Respect Life office for the Archdiocese of Chicago came to our office for referrals because they wanted their children to be raised by a mother and a father in a Catholic, mm-hmm. in a practicing Catholic family. That was important to the birth mother, which is why they sought us out in the first place. There are plenty of other adoption agencies they could go to, but to take that, you know, that one particular desire of the birth mother herself and mm-hmm. not to help her accommodate that desire, I really find that's an incredible overreach on the part of the government.
Yeah, and what it does is it limits the possibilities available in terms of foster parents and things like that. So the court, in saying that it's not right for the government to condition the ability of Catholic Social Services to participate in certifying foster parents, it's unconstitutional to condition that participation on them putting aside their religious beliefs. In other words, saying you can't certify, you have to do it our way.
Right.
You have to toss your belief aside. No matter what, how strongly you believe it and whatever, we as the government are saying, you have to believe something different. You have to do something different if you're going to participate in certifying.
And so
fortunately, the court did not go along with that.
Right. And this isn't the first time that the court has ruled 9-0 in favor of religious liberty. Of course, we saw that mm-hmm. several years ago in Hosanna Tabor. Mm-hmm. which was a case involving, you know, funding for used rubber tires, if I remember correctly, to make mm-hmm. it to playgrounds that a Lutheran school had applied for those kind of funds that were generally available to all sorts of other schools. And it was interesting because Chief Justice Roberts also wrote that opinion. And I was trying to scramble to find the line, but he has a very funny line in his opinion near the beginning of it where he says, Plaintiffs in this case try to argue that the First Amendment's religious liberty clause actually has nothing to do with religious liberty. a belief that this court strongly rejects. So I thought that was one of the, you know, few Supreme Court opinions. I actually burst out laughing when I was reading it. But again, I haven't read through the whole opinion, and I know it's very new. So, but Mary, the other interesting piece of it, and Loretta and I drove down together to the studio today, is that this comes during Pride Month. And I don't know, I'm a glutton for punishment or something, but I was reading through just some of the public comments on Washington Post, and the other side is not taking this well, as I imagined that they wouldn't, but but are seeing in it an additional slap in the face because it's during Pride Month. Mary, this was...
I think one of the things that's highlighted here and that your observation points out is that there really seems to be a very strong animus towards religious freedom and religious beliefs being expressed in the public square, and that certain activists within the LGBT community are doubling down on that, and they're not afraid to show that animus. And I think I think the fact that the court had a 9-0 decision here was perhaps an attempt to say, look, a city or the government is free to say these non-discrimination provisions are important, but religion and the practice of the free exercise of religion in our public square, in our society, that's important too. You can't, this is not a winner-take-all kind of a thing.
Right.
And so I think the court was, and perhaps that was, who knows what goes on in conferences, but I think the fact that, yes, it came down in Pride Month, but you had a 9-0 decision, it could be a message that the court is sending to say, hey, you're being not just unrealistic, but unfair here.
Right.
You know, it's not right to expect.
To force religious organizations and religious people to violate their consciences is not something that is enshrined in the First Amendment or any place in the Constitution. I'm thinking back a little bit to Alito's dissent in the Obergefell case, the case that legalized same-sex marriage, where he says, you know, right now everyone is saying all this is going to do is impact the couples involved. It will not have any impact. All we want to do is to be let alone, to live and let live, right? And this won't affect, none of you should be worried. All these specters of, you know, oppression and stuff that you're throwing out are just that. They're illusionary. And now here we are 4 years later, and Alito warned of this.
Yeah.
There will be times where people like me, because I am a practicing Catholic, will be told, you're a bigot for holding that opinion. It's not just a difference of agreement anymore. Now you are a bigot and must be punished.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I am glad that the court's pushing back on that, because that is the direction that, again, sort of the activist wing of the LGBT community has been going in.
Yeah.
They really are, they don't want compromise. They don't want space for everyone. They don't. So it's a really good thing to see this kind of unanimity on the Supreme Court among justices who vehemently disagree about all sorts of things.
Right.
And yet they're still saying there is a place for religious institutions, and as a government, you can't just start picking and choosing and saying you've got to believe this or sign on to this in order to be part of a partnership here and to serve others.
You cannot be a functioning charitable organization unless you will compromise religious beliefs that go back centuries and millennia in our case. That marriage is a particular institution elevated by Christ as a sacrament between a man and a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And we are still allowed to believe that. But Mary, there's another case, and this is, again, you know, was the initial reason we were hoping to have you on today, but this was kind of a happy coincidence that the decision in Fulton came out today. But there's another case involving transgender athletes that's also out of Pennsylvania. Is that correct?
There are numerous cases. I'm not sure which one you're
thinking
you're
of. The one with the two young women, high school track stars who were had their
Connecticut.
First, oh, sorry, I'm getting my East Coast states mixed up. Anything east of Indiana for someone in Chicago is, you know, it's all the same thing. No, the Connecticut athletes. Pardon me. Thank you for that correction. Can you speak a little bit about that case, what you know? Do you think this portends anything for the case of the Connecticut sprinters?
I don't. At this point, they're not alleging a freedom of religion argument in that case. So they're talking there about women's equal opportunities and the rationality of provisions that separate on the basis of sex. So that's not a direct religious liberty claim. But I think another case that is very interesting and should be of concern to people across the country relating to these kinds of conflicts is the recent case of a teacher in Loudoun County, Virginia, who spoke up at a school board meeting and said, I am not going to call a boy, a male student, a girl. I believe something different, you know, as a Christian. He said, I cannot do that. And the school then put him on leave. In other words, they said, you're not fit to teach. And the court said, and this is still at a preliminary level, but the court said, no, you can't do that. You can't just tell someone who's a Christian that they can't speak up it, because they're a teacher employed by the government. They're not free to speak up at a public school board meeting and express concern over a policy that would require them to lie, require them to affirm a belief that violates their deepest religious principles. So that court case is that was a district court ruling, and it's going to be appealed. But we'll see where that goes. That was an encouraging sign to have that principle validated.
Right.
That we have to be free to speak. We have to be able to allow people to be in government employment. And not disqualify them because they hold biblical beliefs about the person or about marriage. And yet that is where the Equality Act wanted to go. That's where a lot of these state laws and the human rights commissions in various places, they are trying to enforce or impose an orthodoxy of belief that everyone has to buy into this idea that you can just sort of redefine yourself, declare a new identity, and everyone else has to go along with that.
Right.
In spite of your religious beliefs.
Exactly. And you know, it's his talk, and I've seen it a couple of times. It went viral a little bit because I've seen it on different either, mm-hmm. you know, more conservative and open to dialogue radio programs and some television shows. There was a little bit of Thomas More in there, right? You know, I die the king's good servant, but God mm-hmm. first. And I was very... I was very grateful to see that there was a groundswell of support for him.
And Mary, mm-hmm. This is Loretta, Mary's co-host.
Hi, Loretta.
Hi. Yeah. It's nice to meet you.
She's getting a word in edgewise.
Well, Mary's so knowledgeable. Yeah, it's like, why?
Now, Mary Hessen knows me well enough. You're lucky you're getting this. You're getting this 2 minutes. Go ahead.
But what I loved about what the teacher said, and he's quoted as saying, I love all of my students, but I will never lie mm-hmm. to them, regardless of the consequences. I'm a teacher, mm-hmm. but here's Mary's quote, but I serve God first, and I will not mm-hmm. affirm that a biological boy can be a girl and vice versa, because it's against my religion, it's lying to my child, it's abuse to a child, and it's sinning against God.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and he spoke the truth.
Amen.
Amen. Amen. And thank God, you know, the court at least initially has backed him and said to the school board, you are overstepping, you know, the bounds of the school administration rather than the school district. You can't fire someone for expressing their beliefs.
Right.
And
imagine if this was reversed, Mary, and it was someone expressing beliefs on any issue from whether or not, you know, transgender people should be able to use bathrooms of their choice or whatever. And mm-hmm. and the other person had expressed that, and if they were challenged, imagine the attack from the mainstream media and from others in the public.
Well, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I actually was looking at the Chicago Public School District policies.
Oh, I'm
separation
sorry.
The talk I'm giving. And, well,
is that like a penance you got in confession or something?
Right.
Look what we did to her, Mary, making her appear on a show in Chicago.
Well, that means we don't have to. That's thank you. So,
well, I'll tell you, though, anyone who is a religious believer who is employed by the Chicago Public Schools needs to understand that it's in those policies that it is expected that if you are a teacher or a staff member, that you will comply by the guidelines, the regulations that specify you must use the students' pronouns and names, and you must respect their privacy and not let their parents know what's going on unless the student gives permission. So there's an awful lot there that is restricting the freedom of speech, freedom of religious belief of teachers. So I'm waiting for someone, you know, to just follow their conscience and speak the truth, because those kinds of regulations are exactly the kinds of things that need to be challenged in court, because
right.
that is an overreach, is a serious violation of free speech and freedom of religion.
Yeah.
But that's what's occurring, you know, this. They get people over a barrel. It's no one wants to risk losing a job,
right.
And so the price of keeping your job is to go along with this narrative, which
right.
is just not true.
Especially one where we've seen here in Chicago, you can serve your job as a Chicago public school teacher during COVID out in Puerto Rico and enjoying yourself in the sun.
Right.
We're not kidding.
Right, right. Yeah,
I remember.
They're not exactly setting a good example, you know, as we would have been encouraged to do as Catholic teachers and people of faith. But Mary, one of the other, since we only have you for 9 more minutes, I want our audience to hear about some of the research that you have done now, particularly about minors and the sort of new effort that I think many parents are not aware of to give minors who are going through gender dysphoria or questioning their gender identity to be given hormones to start a transition, quote unquote, process,
mm-hmm.
often without the parents' knowledge or consent. We are fighting a very bitter and difficult battle right here mm-hmm. in Illinois right now over parental notification of abortion. I think mm-hmm. I've mentioned that to you. We have Planned Parenthood has built 3 new clinics at the Missouri, Wisconsin, and Indiana borders. That's been done intentionally mm-hmm. all in the last 4 years. But mm-hmm. but you have research indicating that that even these transition hormones are now being given out at Planned Parenthood abortion clinics.
Oh yeah, Planned Parenthood actually advertises it widely. I've seen comments by Planned Parenthood employees boasting about how they are one of the top providers of quote transgender hormone services across the country. Now in some states they specifically limit that and say they will not treat minors. In other states they do, and it depends on the state whether they're going to allow minors to request hormone treatments and provide that only if the parent is notified and consents. In other cases, that's clearly not the case because minors' ability to consent is very much a matter of state law, and there's
right.
a wide disparity. But I'll tell you what, again, going back to Chicago and Illinois, you know, parents get lulled into a false sense of security because everyone's familiar with the horror stories of your kid not being able to get a Tylenol or an aspirin unless
right.
they track down the mom and get her permission. And yet, the general rule is parents have to consent to a minor's medical treatment. However, the exceptions are swallowing the rule, because the exceptions in many states say that a child as young as 12 can consent to testing, treatment related to STIs, contraception, even HIV preventative drugs.
Yeah.
For example, if someone is sexually active and they want to take drugs to lessen their likelihood of getting HIV, that minors, again, 12 and up,
mm-hmm.
are being allowed to consent for themselves. And you want to just shake your head and say, wait a minute, if you have a 12 or 13-year-old who is coming into a clinic and is being tested for STIs, you have a problem, and the parents need to know, how can they protect that child?
Correct.
But this
yep.
is where the government and school personnel, medical personnel insert themselves between the child and the parent.
Yep.
And they want to block that out so the parents are not told, are not able to protect their kids.
Yes,
and
that's
so parents
right.
need to be aware. You, even though you're signing a consent form or something that specifies you have to give your consent to medical procedures, that does not apply to this whole area involving sex and reproduction. And the gender treatments are, the other side is trying to sort of push those into those exceptions,
right.
even though they are typically not enumerated under state law. So that's what they're trying to do. And parents have got to be aware and got to speak out and push back.
Yeah. And, you know, Mary, as a former prosecutor, I am so concerned when a minor shows up with a sexually mm-hmm. transmitted disease. Are you telling mm-hmm. me that she or he acquired that from another 12-year-old? You know, that is something that is so, it just mm-hmm. screams for investigation. How is a child getting a sexually mm-hmm. transmitted disease?
Right. Right, and especially when you talk about a child then asking for drugs so that they can continue
yes.
to have, for example, the homosexual sex, which puts them at high risk of,
right.
of acquiring HIV, they're gonna go along with that and give a 12, 13, 14-year-old those kinds of medications without involving parents?
Yeah.
And you've got a child abuse situation there. You
yep.
you know that.
Yeah.
There's some adult taking advantage of that child.
And often it's, you know, there's trafficking involved. And,
yes.
Mm-hmm. You know,
there's some adult committing a crime against a child.
Yeah. Well, we know from the, mm-hmm. what is it, the National Committee on Teen Human Pregnancy or something like that is, our teen pregnant people, I think we're supposed to say now, that 35% of all girls between 15 and 17 are impregnated by a man at least 7 to 8 years older than she is. So
wow.
you're sometimes looking at statutory rape. I mean, there's all sorts mm-hmm. of problems. But Mary, as we wrap up this first half hour, this conversation has flown by with you. Can you give listeners who might have minor girls and minor boys who would be concerned about this sort of stuff, what are good resources, good places they can go to learn a little bit more?
They should become aware of what the situation is in their own state because
okay.
it's very variable.
Right.
And the Guttmacher puts out a summary of state laws and ages of consent. The Guttmacher Institute, they're the bad guys.
Right. They're a former Planned Parenthood affiliate. So
right. And,
yeah.
and they're putting it out there because they're trying to let minors know what they can do. And there are other sort of sexual rights groups that also publicize that. The CDC has some information. But that's the first step. You got to find out what the law is in your area.
Okay.
And then you need to make it known to your own pediatrician, to your own internist, that you expect to be notified
yeah.
and you expect to be brought into the conversation. And then you have to be aggressive about tracking child treatment records because,
right.
unfortunately, there is another tendency that if a child is seeking services that they consider confidential and under this exception, that then the physicians or medical personnel will not even provide you with the child's records
right.
if they include that kind of information. So it's a deceptive thing. And frankly, it's something that I think as we've become as a society more aware of the scandal of child abuse and child sexual molestation and things like that, that we need to push back and say this is not acceptable.
Right.
12, 13, 14, anyone under the age of sexual consent, you've got to bring parents into that. How can they protect them otherwise?
Right, exactly. Well, Mary Hessen, I know we can always find out more about you if we go to the website of the Ethics and Public Policy Center and click under the Scholars page for Mary Rice Hessen, and it'll take you to Mary's articles, her books. And I think we even have some like YouTube copies of presentations of your talks there as
yes,
well. Yeah,
we have a website, personandidentity.com, which has tons of information on the whole transgender issue, and parents can find the information they need to understand that topic, to understand the risks and threats to their kids. So
yeah.
personandidentity.com is the place to go for that.
Terrific. And we'll have that up on our show page then after we're done today. So Mary Rice Hessen, again, attorney at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, the Kate O'Byrne Fellow and Director of the Catholic Women's Forum. Thank you so much for giving so generously of your time today on such short notice.
Thank you, Mary.
Great to talk to you.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
God bless you and your good work, Mary. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Every parent has a dream of giving their children a great education and great faith. St. Stanislaus Kostka School, a nationally acclaimed Catholic leadership school, has made the dream easier for you to achieve. Here, leadership principles and lessons are an integral part of your child's coursework and school culture. Your child will study foreign languages, such as Mandarin, conduct experiments in real science labs, attend Eucharistic adoration, and more. Don't worry about affording a private education. St. Stanislaus Kostka School offers full tuition scholarships for kindergarten through eighth grade. Send your child to St. Stanislaus Kostka School, located just minutes from downtown Chicago. Dreams can come true, but you need to call today, 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560.
773-278-4560. And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
And welcome back. This is Mary Helen Fiorito sitting in on a Thursday. You're not looking at the wrong calendar. We are normally here on Mondays, but we're sitting in today for Father Anthony, who's taken ill and has taken some time to get better. So please keep Father in your prayers. I am joined, as I am most days, with my co-host, Loretta Frelick, who is a former prosecutor for the state's attorney's office, where she specialized in putting bad people in jail who should not be out on the streets. Does that kind of sum it up, Loretta?
If only it were that simple, Mary. If only it were that simple, and that I got to put more in jail than out on probation.
Oh, that's good. There you go. So you did your good work for the Lord, but now she's retired and has taken on an additional penance by sitting here with me every week. So I got to do, Loretta, as Loretta knows, because I was gone last week, I got to do something really terrific, which was to take one of the very first trips I've had. All of my speaking engagements, you know, about 18 months ago when we had the lockdown, got canceled. And this is one of the very first times I've gotten on a plane and gone and given a talk as a human being in front of other human beings. I've done a lot by Zoom, but it was wonderful that the very second talk I've given now since almost 2 years was at the Given Institute. And it was a fantastic conference that lasted for several days. I was there for a full day of it. And we are so privileged to have with us the executive director of the Givens Institute, Rachel Harkins Ullman. Rachel has a really incredible background and very, very varied, if that's a way to put it, in serving the church. She has a degree in its educational management. Is that correct, Rachel? Did I get that right from Johns Hopkins? Rachel, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, so you have a Master's of Science, actually, from Johns Hopkins, but in Education Administration. Is that correct? I want to make sure I get
correct.
That right. And then also a graduate of the Franciscan University of Steubenville in Theology and Religious Education, has been a teacher and also an associate principal and worked for the Archdiocese of Baltimore as a development director, and is now with the Given Institute. So she's had a wide variety of service to the church at both the local level and now at the national level. And Rachel, welcome. We are just so pleased. This is your first time on the show. We're so happy to have you here.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, I hope we don't frighten you off, because we'll try to be nice to you.
I'd love to come back. We'll see how it goes.
We're really nice the first time, and then it may get ugly the next time. I'm kidding, of course. So, Rachel, tell us a little bit about, you know, this was actually my first time at Given when I spoke at the conference this last week. So I was familiar with it, of course, but I'd never been there in person, and you know, it's one of those things where you really do have to be there, as they say, to fully appreciate what a gift it is to the church. Can you tell us a little bit about how Given began and what the purpose of Given is for Catholic young professional women?
I'd love to. Our history actually began in 2015 when the church was celebrating universally the year of consecrated life. So Pope Francis had called for a wider participation of the leadership of consecrated men and women in the life of the church. And truth be told, it was a pretty miraculous moment that a large philanthropic organization approached CMSWR, so that's the Collaborative of Women Religious Bodies here in the United States,
right,
and approached them saying, this year the church is celebrating you, and we want to award you a lot of money, and we want you to dream big with this money. What would you do with $1 million? I mean, can you imagine if someone came to you with that proposal? And so the board of directors of CMSWR...
Wait, who gave you that money?
Came up. the Hilton Foundation.
Rachel, don't make it sound like it's so unusual.
Hotel.
I dream of getting $1 million all the time.
I didn't know it was that easy.
I know.
All you got to do is ask. And then, okay, go ahead.
Well, even better, they didn't ask. The Hilton Foundation approached CMSWR, which is really
beautiful.
Incredible.
That's
and
beautiful.
So the board of directors, they sat down and they really took that task of dreaming big, and they looked at the landscape of the United States and said, what's missing? And that's how the Given Forum was first inaugurated. They felt that women in their 20s, young adults, didn't have an apostolate dedicated specifically to them. And so the religious sisters who are a part of CMSWR, they came together and they created this incredible event called the Given Forum, which hosts leadership training and faith formation for young adults ages 21 to 30. And what's even more important is not just that are these women coming together for a forum, but they also are paired with a dedicated mentor who works with them for an entire year after the event.
Wow. And what's the goal of that, the mentoring? I know I have a couple of friends now who I've learned bumping into them. They're mentors. And tell me what is sort of the goal or the purpose of this mentoring program?
Well, I would say first and foremost, the goal is for each of these young women to continue on a path of holiness. You know, as simple as that. We want all of these young adults to be accompanied in their journey towards heaven.
Right.
But practically speaking, we also have the mentorship all surrounding the implementation of that young woman's action plan. So each woman who applies to come to a forum, she writes an action plan proposal of what she believes are the unique gifts that God has given her and how she wants to use them at the service of the church and the world. That's why we're called Given. We are women given to others. God has given us great gifts, and we're turning back and using them to serve. And so the mentors work with the young women on the development of that action plan and the ultimate launch of it.
Yeah. And, you know, Rachel, were you a Given participant before, you know, you became the executive director? Did you go through this program yourself?
No, I wasn't. It's a really amazing story of how God brought me to Given that I'd love to share with you. It was just about 2.5 years ago that I was helping out a friend who asked me to teach her natural family planning. And I said, oh, sure, here's a stack of 10 books for you to read, right?
And some
my
stickers,
friend said,
and your
oh,
chart and
dear.
Some stickers.
Right.
There you go.
Right. And my friend said, Rachel, I don't have the attention span for that. That's too much. I need a one-stop shop. I need one simple website. And I said to my friend, you know, when I first learned NFP, that didn't exist, but I'll look. I'll try to find something for you. and I go online, a simple Google search, and I found this amazing resource called managingyourfertility.com. It's exactly what my friend needed. I sent it to her. And then I think, I got to know who made this, right? This is so amazing that someone was inspired to do this. And I go to the About section on the website, and I read that it was a young adult woman in her 20s that went to the Given Forum in 2016, and her action plan was creating this resource portal.
Oh, interesting.
And I just was completely blown away. You know, I said, Lord, what is this Given? I have to know more. So I go on their website, and I first applied to be a mentor, and then ends up they were hiring, and here I am as the executive director.
Yeah, well, you know, that's interesting because actually my first encounter was being asked to speak at a Femme Catholic conference here in Chicago.
Yes.
That was also that was also a result and the action plan of, I think, three women who had gone to Give It. And so when they first contacted me to speak, because, they, you know, they wanted to start with something local, they told me that it was, you know, a Femme Catholic website to try to combine the church's true teaching on the dignity of women and the way that certain feminist ideals actually very much comport with church teaching. And so I was asked to give a talk at that and was very impressed with the young women that I met. And so was so thrilled to be at the conference this year. And, you know, aside from me, you had some pretty heavy hitters there. I mean, you had a lineup that was, I was just there for like comedic relief, but you had a lineup that, I mean, my panel alone, I was trying to tell Loretta a little bit about this on the, in the car on the way down here. You know, it was a Catholic OBGYN and a nun who was a surgeon and also an Army sergeant, you know. And I mean, just a Catholic entrepreneur who created programs for women in third world countries to sell their craft goods, you know, and provide for themselves. How did you put together such a terrific program? How long did it take you to do all of that?
Well, because of the pandemic last year, we actually had 2 years to plan the forum.
Oh, that's right.
We
of course.
Had to.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I had a little more time than typically to plan for our annual event. But I will say the way that I find so many of our speakers is through my already network of Catholic female leaders that are part of Given.
Right.
We have an incredible board of directors and advisors that are always giving me suggestions of incredible spokeswomen. And what we look for, not only as speakers, but women who serve as Given mentors, is we want women who are faithful to the teachings of the church, that are imbued with the spirit of the gospel, and also are a lot of fun.
Right.
Are women who are, they're real. They're real women,
right?
And that is so important for young adults to see that, that it's not an unattainable goal to be a happy, healthy, holy Catholic woman, that they are here in our midst, right? They're here in your local parish. They're in your local diocese. So I have a lot of, you know, groundwork women across the country that are giving me more and more suggestions of maybe there's women that aren't always on the speaker circuit who are a bit more hidden figures, and yet their stories are so
Or they're more they're locally known, you know, rather than more nationally known people, and there's a lot of them. And it's wonderful to see that you tap into kind of those smaller networks of women who, because then that I think provides for, you know, the women that come from all across the country to be like, oh, well, you know, this person was just kind of a, you know, regular 25-year-old and from the area where I live. I could do this. So it allows people to have, you know, visions then for themselves that go beyond the world that they live in.
Rachel, can I ask you, this is Loretta, how do you put together a Giving conference? What's the purpose of your conference? Who do you seek to draw from? And then how many days does it last? What's the, how do you do the speakers? Is there a particular topic? What goes into a Giving conference?
Sure. The Giving Forum is always a five-day event. And we typically have first a evening gathering where we cast the vision of what we're doing here. And what we're doing at Given is raising the next generation of Catholic female leaders. And we do that through that mentorship that I've been describing, by pairing together emerging leaders, young adults, ages 21 to 30, with established women leaders in the church and the world. And our event lasts over 5 days, and we hit three key themes. First, we help the young women first recognize to receive the gift that they are, that they themselves are a unique and unrepeatable gift that God has created individually.
Right.
Then the second day's theme is to realize the gift you've been given. So some discernment of charism, discernment of what are those pieces that only I have. Do I have a charism for hospitality? Am I a public speaker? You know, what are those things that are unique to me? And then the third and final theme is to respond with the gift only you can give, and that's through that action plan. So we first go through a lot of time of healing, understanding a woman's true identity and femininity, realizing her specific and unique gifts, and then putting them into practice, using them through that action plan when she goes back home under the direction of a mentor and using her gifts at the service of others. So it's a five-day event that's jam-packed with a lot of great stuff. We have keynote speakers, panels. We also have a lot of time for prayer. Something really unique, I think, to Given is that we have prayer workshops each day where we teach the young women on different styles of prayer, such as Lectio Divina, Ignatian discernment, because we know as Catholic female leaders, you can't just have great administrative skills. You also have to know how to pray. You have to know how to bring all of those big ideas, those big inspirations to the feet of the Lord, because it's not always an easy ride. So that's another aspect of the Given Forum is leadership training, dedicated mentoring, but that faith formation piece of making sure that a woman knows her relationship with the Lord is paramount.
Yeah, and I could just tell you like one just little anecdote after the panel that I was on. I was, you know, just kind of chit-chatting with some of the women who had waited to speak with me, and the very last one, very sweet young woman, shared something with me that was quite serious, and I said, have you talked to anyone about this before? And she said, no. She said, can I give you my phone number? And I said, yes, I think you should. I'm happy to talk to you about this and help you to connect with maybe somebody that could work with you more in depth on this particular thing. But I was quite moved by that because it wasn't the thing she approached me about. And I don't want to violate her privacy, but, the thing she had approached me about, I hadn't really gone into in any depth, you know, so I was surprised. It's just kind of one of those moments where God... I felt God like put me there, and maybe she felt comfortable enough with me that I wasn't, you know, she knew I wasn't going to say I was going to condemn. I would condemn anybody, but you know what I'm saying. Like she just felt maybe this lady is somebody I can talk to about this. So that was, I have to tell you, of all the things I took away, and I took away a lot of things just from being there. That was to me such just a moment of God's power in.
That's so wonderful.
You know, in the conference, just so you know, like, and I know sometimes you put together something like this and you think, man, that was a lot of work for nothing. I'm sure you don't think that, but you know what I mean? Like you do all this and you were like, what was the point of all that I just went through? And then maybe, you know, 2 years later, you find out something and the person will say, oh no, that happened because of the Given conference I was at.
Right. Thank you so much for sharing that. You know, and it's really powerful, Mary, because you were there on the third of the fifth day.
Yeah.
So imagine that young woman had already been there for a good portion of the forum, but it wasn't until you arrived, right? And whatever it is that you said or whatever you gave witness to, that she had the courage to bring that to you. And that's what's really intentional about who we invite, not just as speakers, as mentors, all the sisters, is that we have a wide diversity of Catholic women. Because these young adults are incredibly diverse,
right?
They're coming from so many different places, backgrounds, and experiences. And if they can see someone that they feel a connection to, then hopefully they have that opportunity over those 5 days to have that safe haven to be able to approach that,
that
leader.
This is a safe person for me to talk, you know, and I wasn't trying to seek out anybody to talk to me about anything, you know, but that was, so again, you know, it's one of those things where you go and you speak someplace and you feel like I got more out of that than I gave, you know, because God always gives you those little.
Oh, wonderful.
But, you know, Loretta here is very involved in the Catholic Charismatic Renewal, and so is quite involved in, you know, planning their national conferences. Loretta's actually on the national service team. And I know, Loretta, you've told me about the amount of prayer that goes into
it's preparing. The only way.
Yeah.
It's the only way.
To prepare for the conference.
You know what? But it's the only way. And I think that as Catholic women, if we don't get that understanding from the get-go,
our failures just seem super huge because there are failures, and they are huge.
Right.
But the minute we give it over to God, it is going from glory to glory to glory, one more miracle after another. So, you know, when you say you're going speaking, pray for me, and, you know, we start a little prayer and we get the network going, it's not just right. that you be great in your speech, which, of course, we always expect from you, Mary, mm-hmm. but... It's that
most of the time.
it's that the Holy Spirit move on that.
Right.
And when the Holy Spirit is in that movement, it invites people to feel safe.
Yeah.
It invites people to open
That's
up.
That's true.
It invites you to be present in ways, you know, if you had taken a left instead of a right to go off that stage, you might have missed that moment.
That's true.
But when the
Absolutely.
Holy Spirit is directing all your yep. action, then you are where you need to be so that the Lord can be in that moment.
Well, and the other cool thing about the conference is that, Rachel, you couldn't turn a corner without bumping into another women religious. And I have this yeah. thing, like, I like to, I don't know if you've ever been to it, but there's actually, like, it's up in near the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, but there's, like, a nun museum and where it's,
I can tell you the hot spots of prayer, but only you would know about a nun.
That'll be my yeah. next vacation.
Yeah, no, you gotta, that's got to be on your Catholic bucket list. And so we were going to the Upper Peninsula. Of course, my parents made us go there. And but it's like 500 or 600 different dolls, each dressed in a different religious habit of a different religious order. And it was, that's all it is. There's nothing more. But it's still very cool. It's a very fun thing.
Takes you 15 minutes to go through, right,
Mary? No, not if you're kind of looking and you're trying to guess. And so, well, my point is that it wasn't quite the Nun Doll Museum that I've been to, but I saw so many different women religious represented there. And so just tell us a little bit about the different communities that are part of it. I mean, the Sisters of Life and the right. Nashville Dominicans and the Ann Arbor Dominicans. And I think the Sisters of Mercy of Alma were there, I think.
Yes, they were.
And Sister Dee Dee Byrne, who's the name of her community I can never remember because there's like five initials after it. But talk a little bit about that because that's a really distinctive part. Yeah.
Yeah, we had over 20 different congregations of women religious at the forum this year, which is really remarkable. And I know that I shared at the beginning about our founding and that grant from the Hilton Foundation, where many people don't know this, that Conrad Hilton of Hilton Hotels in his final will and testament said he wanted the majority of his assets to support Catholic sisters. So you think about that his experience as a school child, his elementary school teachers who were religious sisters made such an impact on him that look where we are today. You know, Given wouldn't be here without that moment and that pen and ink. And so we bring together as many religious sister communities that are able to come to the forum and serve as mentors. But not only that, they actually are our volunteer team. So I'm sure you saw a lot of sisters that were even running tech, changing the batteries and the microphones.
Yep, yep.
They were the ones arranging the flowers.
Oh, no.
I mean, these women, they know how to serve.
Right? Amen.
Well,
amen.
They were
doing everything.
But where do you get these young women that are willing to be mentored, that are giving of themselves, that are choosing lives that reflect God's goodness and graciousness to them and want to put in their plan service to the church? I mean, most women you see today running around on their iPhones, they're just texting away. And so where do you find these young women?
We find them through a lot of our strategic partners. So we work closely with Focus and many of those missionary
Sure.
opportunities where young adults already are well-formed in the faith. They know the teachings of the church. They've embraced that, and they want to go even deeper. They want their lives to be a gift to others. So many times it's through our strategic partners, but actually those religious sister communities are sometimes our best ambassadors. So oftentimes they, throughout the year, whenever they are meeting young women at their come and see retreats or sure. women who work alongside them and volunteer, they say, hey, you would be a great candidate for Given. We see leadership potential in you, and we want you to come to the Given Forum. And to be honest, our alumni are also the best advertisement that we have. We have now over 500 women across the country who have been a part of a Given Forum and been mentored, and they are spreading the word with their friends. They have been changed. They have been transformed. They are so joyful about their experience. And so, thankfully, they go out and they recruit all of their wonderful young adult friends to come. But I would say that I would hope that anyone who comes to Given is pleasantly surprised at the hopefulness of these young people, that they do sometimes break the stereotypes of what we imagine young people to be, of being selfish, being self-centered. But that's not what we see about the young women that apply and come to the forum.
Yeah, I have to affirm that. Every young woman I met was nicer than the next. And how? So if there's parents listening, or even a young woman herself in that 21 to 30 age range, how does somebody apply? How many applicants do you normally get every year? Do you have to sit down with all the applications and, you know, pick and choose? What is that process like to be able to go to Given? And when does it open?
Sure. Yeah, we typically host the forum the second week of June, and applications for the upcoming event open on November 1st. So All Saints Day, mark your calendars.
Okay, November
1st. That is when applications for young adults open. And we have that window open until about mid-February. And the application is not something you can do overnight. It is lengthy. So not only do you have the action plan proposal, but there also is about 10 additional pages on the application where we ask the young women questions about their educational experience, their professional experience, but also answering some answer questions, essay questions about how they see the feminine genius impacting the church and the world. What's their prayer life like? What's their relationship with the Lord? How do they see women as leaders being an important part of what God has planned in this journey of salvation? So it's a really exciting process. Any woman who sits down and goes through the application process feels edified, is what I have been told. And we typically accept between 100 and 150 women for each Given Forum cohort. And we do have more applicants than spots to fill. So it is something that we encourage women, when that November 1st date hits, to apply and really pray and discern if this is something that you may want to be a part of.
Right. Well, can you, as we kind of wrap up here now, Rachel, can you give us the contact information, your website, and then any other parting thoughts you would have, first of all, to young women who might be hearing this and saying, oh, maybe I should do this, but I'm nervous and I'm going to be surrounded by nerds, or, you know, or parents who really want to encourage their daughters to go. First of all, we need the website, but then also tell us how you encourage a young woman to really consider this seriously.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, you can find us online at giveninstitute.com. You can find us on social media at Given Institute on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I would really encourage anyone, if you're discerning the possibility, to go on our YouTube channel, because we have all of the past talks from the former forums up there. Now, Mary, yours isn't up there yet. We don't have the most recent forum talks up yet. They will be.
I will not take that personally. I'm sure that is not a judgment on the substance of my judgment.
Yeah. But that would really be a great first step, is get a little glimpse of what the forum is like and what we see as a Catholic female leader and what we're trying to do to equip young women. But if anyone is feeling anxious, is this for me? Is this something that may be a part of my life? I would just want to encourage everyone that you're covered in prayer. You know, Loretta, what you were saying about prayer is so true, that a little known secret about Given is not only are all the religious sisters who are present at the forum praying for us, but their communities back at home. Hundreds upon hundreds of religious sisters are praying for all the women in each cohort. And we also every year send letters to every single cloister community in the United States. It's over 200 locations across the U.S. And we give them intentional prayer requests of what we're asking over those 5 days. And Mary, if you got a chance to see the program booklet, you could see all the names of the cloister communities that committed to praying for us over those 5 days of interceding.
That's beautiful.
And
you have to know that the Lord wants you there. You've got all those women that are praying for you.
Well, Rachel, that music means that our time has come to an end. This has flown by, Rachel, and we are so grateful to you for making time for us on short notice today. We hope that we didn't scare you off and that you'll come back on again, maybe when you start to open up the applications, that we can talk a little bit more about giving.
Wonderful.
Okay, thank you again for being with us. And listeners, thank you for listening. Please keep Father Anthony in your prayers. This has been Mary Fiorito and Loretta Fralick sitting in for Father on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. Have a great weekend.
No sense. Do we search deep for truth or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? Such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now.